Welcome, everybody, to Out Comes the Sun podcast radio show. Woo! We're on Lit Live, we're on Spotify, we're on YouTube, we're on Apple, we're everywhere. And I'm here with my best friend and co-host, Melissa Yamaguchi. I'm so glad that you joined us, everyone. And Melissa, you've been on the road.
I have been. I was back in Oklahoma with the wind. Yes. And so I grew up in Oklahoma and I forgot about the wind. Mm. And I got to tell you something. I don't care how much I was flooding my skin with moisturizers and putting everything on me and drinking water and putting my salt in my and doing everything I can, and I still felt incessantly dehydrated.
Really?
So the winds, when you've left a location and you've acclimated or been there your whole life, and so you understand the temperatures and the weather and all that, then you go, going back into it, I didn't realize how horrific the effect of the wind was on my body, my skin, my hair, my breathing, my speaking, everything.
Absolutely. I mean, when I go back to Idaho, you know, I have to adjust for like probably 10 days because it's so much drier. Yeah. It's so dry. I feel so dehydrated. And so, you know, and it really is, it's tough. We get, you know, thinking of getting older, which, you know, we do, it sucks it out of you even more
it
so.
Does.
You know, it's really a challenge.
I only noticed it because I got out of the shower and I was putting lotion on and I saw parts of my skin and I was like, I mean, like little teeny tiny window panes in part and stuff because it looks scaly from being so dry. And I thought for a moment, like it was like snake skin, like there was something severely wrong.
I have that every day. So welcome to the world of dry.
No. I couldn't believe it.
I go out in the sun. I think of you every day because I go out in the sun. Obviously, I do it too much. And, you know, I do put a zinc sunscreen on. It's healthy, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, ultimately, the best sunscreen is to wear a hat and a lot of clothes. But I don't do that. So I look down and I see a scaly kind of snake-like thing. Sometimes it's super unpleasant. And in the wrong lighting, that could depress you for the rest of your life.
I was talking to someone about mitochondrial, you know, and then the cellular overturn. And we were talking about how the fact that a baby, you remember when your girls were little and a baby can get a cut and like the next day it's gone. And you're like, the baby got like a little cut and it's gone. And then, you know, as we get older, the cut, you know, moves in and starts paying rent. It just stays with you.
It's so true. No,
it's amazing.
Yes, and that's again and again we say this, but it's why you have to pay more attention. What am I doing? Am I drinking enough water? What are the things that could you know enable me to create more collagen to heal faster? Whatever it is,
that's
but
exactly right.
You have to make more of an effort. And it seems like, oh my gosh, I've gotten this far. I shouldn't have to make it more of an effort, but that's the truth of it, because as gravity starts pulling you down, you've got to do things to trick it.
It's true.
Times, right?
And I like this. I like the approach that it is true that growing older is a gift. Those of us that are lucky to get older, but the aging is the disease. I was around, you know, I spoke with some people that when I was back in Oklahoma, and some of the people with whom I was speaking or that I had met up with or that I was visited by were talking about getting older and how horrific it is. And I said, I don't see it that way. I really don't. It's a gift. I mean, you know this, Mariel. One of my dearest friends as a child, as a young high school girl, was killed in a car accident by a drunk driver. And she died at the age of 17. So I feel like I'm lucky to still be here. And even if I had a friend that died at the age of 55, I'm lucky to still be here. So, you know, getting older is a gift, but it's all in our approach. And it's how if we look at this, like, you know, like someone like our guest is coming on, like, you know what? It's just different. It's not bad. It's just a different thing. Like when you have kids, your life is different. When your kids leave the house, your life is different. It's all different.
Yeah, it is. It is different. And, you know, you bring that up and I'm 62. I'm older than my grandfather, Ernest Hemingway, when he took his life. I am older than him,
It's
which is
amazing.
shocking to me because in my
Yeah.
mind, he's always my grandfather and,
Yeah.
big white beard and all that, the whole thing. And so many of my family members, I'm older than, than they were when they were gone. And
Yes.
that's a weird thing because I don't see, and I still don't see myself as old, like that's not,
No, that's just it.
yeah,
Your
I just
grandfather was
don't.
young. In this day and age, he's a young man, right?
That's
Back
what
then,
I'm thinking.
it was a different age time, but still it's I know it's amazing.
It is amazing. It really is amazing. Like, I think of my sister, who was my older sister Margot, who took her life in 1996, and she was only 39 years old.
Oh, baby.
She was
Yeah.
so young,
Yeah.
and I'm so much older than her. I mean, she had not lived any of the life that I've led. You know what I mean? It's like,
I
which
do.
is an odd concept. It's like, it's just very interesting. We don't have words for somebody who didn't complete,
That's
like
right.
they didn't have the opportunity or the chance or the whatever it is. They made choices that were challenging because of the difficulty that they were going through or whatever. But it's like even like your friend who died by an accident, it's like they never had all that life. And yet you had, and yet we have such memories,
Yes.
such important memories. I think of
That's
my
right.
mother. My mother was, she d died when she was only 64. That's 2 years older than me, but my mother led a very, she was sick most of her life. So she aged very quickly. I mean, the aging process really took over because it was like illness and medication and cancer therapies and, and
Yeah.
all those things. And it's interesting through different people. And we talked about this the other day. We talked about, how people, you look at them and, oh my gosh, I know so and so, and they live to 100 and they live, and
Right.
they smoke cigarettes and drink whiskey. And we talked about this too on one of our other shows. But I mean, they also lived in a different time.
Different times. And I
Different.
recently heard a scientist say, if you approach life with this notion that from the moment we're born, right after that, our body begins to cook. And the
Yeah.
body is cooking. And when the body has completed its cooking cycle, then it's done. You're done.
Yeah.
And you know, I plan on steam basting myself for a long time.
Looks like you're steam basing because you have your skin is very glowy. So you're whatever you're doing it right. But it's true. And you know what they call that? I mean, in actuality, that's oxidation, internal oxidation. That's what the aging process is. It's as the body is literally cooking on the inside. It's like it's just falling,
Yes.
it's just using too much oxygen, it's over oxygenated, and it's not a good thing, So we have to how do we trick our bodies into not doing that so rapidly?
And
But that
we have
goes on
the
that
answers.
those yeah, we do.
We have the answers.
There are habits that you can create that really will slow that
That's
process.
right. That's right.
Drinking water, don't drink as much. I mean, I'm sorry to tell you all who are enjoying their alcohol, just please be moderate because it's taking you down, man. And that's not me telling anybody what they should or shouldn't do in their lives. It's just
Lighten up on the libations, people.
Rough on the it's rough on human beings, and we want to keep doing it,
Yeah.
and it's hard. Talk about oxygen.
Talk
Anyway,
about it.
talk
Say it
about
first and then talk about it.
it. Say it, then you bleh.
We're talking about
Maybe
oxygen.
you can't say it, I won't do it.
You are the year of the ox. Maybe that's why you keep stopping. Ox, ox, ox.
Way. Yeah, that's cool. We have such a great guest. She's wonderful. She's from Canada. Her name is Marilyn Smith. And she, I saw her on, I saw her on Instagram. I sent you the video. Yep. She was talking about fart walks, which you do after dinner, apparently. Apparently I do them in the morning, but just, that's a little too much information, but that's when that seems to happen mostly for me, much to Bobby's great laughter.
Now I know why they're solo.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going on a solo journey, Melissa. Okay.
I'm by myself. Thank you very
self-fueled.
Much. Yes, exactly. Anyway, I saw that. It made me laugh, and I reached out to her right away. She's lovely. She's written 8 wonderful cookbooks. She does breakfast television in Toronto. She does it with a really good friend of mine, Dana Pugliese. I can't say her name either. Yeah. Anyway, she is wonderful, and you're going to love her. She's got a good spirit. She's got a really wonderful attitude towards you know, living our lives, as she says, wonderfully, aging wonderfully. So I look forward to that. So don't go anywhere, because she's up next on Out Comes the Sun podcast. Well, hello, everyone. We are back. We are back with a wonderful guest whom I saw on the internet. Actually, one of my followers sent me a video, and it's by this wonderful guest that we have, Marilyn Smith, and she was talking about fart walks, and I laughed for so long. I just was like, oh my God. But anyway, that being said, she does talk about aging wonderfully. She's very specific about that, and I love that. I love that she's saying, you know, aging, but is something that we can walk into with joy. Anyway, Marilyn is here with us today to talk about her many cookbooks and kind of your approach. I really want you to get to kind of dive into your approach to aging wonderfully, which I actually love that term.
Thank you.
Fart walks too, if you'd like.
You know, I decided back in my 40s that I wanted to just feel fantastic. And that, so to that end, I kind of looked at proactive ways that I would age so that I would have vitality and have the energy to keep up with my son. I mean, I had my son when I was 37. So I wanted to be not the old mom in the playground. I wanted to be the young mom. And so, yeah, so because of those kinds of things, I've been eating well, you know, I exercise, I do mindful meditation. But I think the biggest thing is that I have a sense of fun, and that I think keeps you young a lot longer than a bunch of other stuff. So my mom always said that I'm silly. I like to go with immature. My husband is kind of my favorite is playmate. So the strategy was just because I just wanted to be vital as I got older.
Well, the irony of what you're talking about is that, you know, Melissa and I talk a lot about this, and we talk about the 7 greatest doctors, which are Dr. Sun, Dr. Air, Dr. Water, Dr. Exercise, Dr. Nutrition, Dr. Earth, and Dr. Rest. They're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they're free. But the truth is, and part of that, we should also add, like Dr. Laughter and Play, and you know, there's so many other things that you have really brought up in a very, you know, easy manner, because that's how you wanted to live your life. But it's so clear that what you've done, and you've fallen into it naturally, is very specific to how you age in a graceful or wonderful manner, as opposed to letting age, you know, because Melissa and I are the belief that aging really is a disease, but growing older is just part of what happens and what we should do. But growing older with joy and fun and curiosity and youthfulness and you know, and the rest of what you've been talking about is so imperative. And I just love your message. I love how you say it. I love that you were part of Second City, because I'm a great big fan of that. So that's huge. Anyway, Melissa.
You got to be on SNL with Will Ferrell. Shut up. Oh my God. I am like, oh, come on. The man is joy.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And that, you know, that was that Will Ferrell, that episode of Saturday Night Live, that was the first time he was ever on Saturday Night Live. That was his debut. My intro to the show was going around and introducing all these new players. And Will Ferrell was one of the new, he'd never been on before. And right off the bat, he was just so funny. Like working with him was so, because I remember when he did that, you know, get off the roof and, or no, not get off the roof. Like, can I help you get off the phone or whatever? And I was just, it was just, you know, like he made that up, you know, whatever he said, you know, I can't even say it.
You know, Mike Myers, he was in my touring company and he had just come into back from England because you kind of get fired a lot from Second City and then they hire you back. Anyway, that's kind of how it went on the stage part, right? So Michael had just come back from England and he had this Beatles suit and he always wanted to play a secret agent. And I was like the oldest one in the cast. I was like, it's not funny. It's just a costume. But he was doing his Austin Powers from the get. Yeah, so that it morphed into that, you know? And so it's like, yeah, and where is Mike and where am I? So I had this sign that I had made and I pulled up in the dressing room and call myself the goddess of comedy. I might not have been the funniest person, but I could tell you what was. And then I totally blew it on that one. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. That's good fun. Melissa.
I have a question for you. I was looking at your site and I was noticing you've got such a healthy, big following. Who are the people that reach out to you the most frequently? And what age group? Do you get women in their 40s that are wanting advice to get to a certain age or younger than that or your age and older? Like who are the people who are asking the most questions?
So my core people are 40 and up. But since the fart walk video, I've got a bunch of 30-year-olds that are saying, hey, I'm just 30. Like, you know, what can I do? But my core starts around 40. And the people that I think going into perimenopause are really reaching out because I think that's the moment where you go, hold the phone. I better be taking really good care of myself because the future could be really, you know, not so hot. Right. So, and you know, in all honesty, that was part of my impetus. My mom went through menopause really badly, but back then no one talked about it. But her mood swings were terrible. So I thought, I don't want to be like that. So way back in university, when I was studying foods and nutrition, I actually was looking into menopause in my 20s thinking, you know, I don't want to be like that. So I think I come from a lot, like, I don't want to be that way. So let's do something proactive so that we don't end up that way, you know, as best we can. Everybody's different and my journey is different than yours. But I mean, I feel sort of like everybody's aunt.
Yeah. You know, the thing about menopause, perimenopause, menopause post is that it's so insufferably unique to each and every soul that doctors and healthcare practitioners in whatever arena they stand really struggle with trying to find the answer. Meryl and I, and in the length of our friendship, she's been through all, Meryl has a really firm grasp on it. I know that she massages and works on the recipe, but she's been my partner. She's my menopause partner. That's what she is. She's my menopause partner. We've been on this journey together and I call her up with all my lamenting and screaming and crying and, oh my gosh, you're not going to believe what I'm going through. And what my lesson is that I've learned is that how incredibly, insufferably unique this is, that they don't call medicine a practice for nothing. They're really trying to figure it out per each person. And it was just recently, Meryl can attest to this, that I took things into my own hand, really upon the encouragement of Marielle. You know, it's important to have a partner who's your soundboard and who encourages you and has some information greater than you at times, saying you can do this, you should try this. And I thought, you know what, I am going to do some of this stuff. And I took it in my own hands and it's the benefits have been huge. So I applaud you having a sound voice and being a place where people can fly to. Resource navigation is huge. It's one of the reasons that we, there's the Mariel Hemingway Foundation, little side plug there. But resource navigation is huge. And I applaud you for having a resource where people can turn to using jocularity, using facts. I read some of your stuff. You had a really great thing on salmon that I'm going to go back to and kind of get your, to write down what you had said so I can utilize your tips. But I think it's so important because there's so much information flying out there. It's hard.
You know, thank you for that. I'm flattered, but whatever happens in my life, I feel that it's not just happening to me. There's other women, other people that are happening it too. So when my mom and dad died, I did a big long series on grief because it took my breath away. And I knew that I could maybe articulate it or make it something that we could chat about. And then I've been recovering from a concussion for the last 13 months, and I've used it as a platform to talk about this invisible disability, you know, yeah. Because I'm fine, but you know, after I do this, I'm going to have to go to bed because you know, it's overstimulation, overwhelming, but I can do that. Like 13 months ago, I couldn't have done this at all. So yeah. I'd like to use my platform to help other people going through whatever it is I've gone through. I think that they might be going through it at one point in their life as well.
Wow. Have you done any kind of neurofeedback? And I'm not trying to be a doctor or anything. Have you done any kind of brain stuff at all?
Yeah, I was really lucky. My strength and conditioning coach with the Iowa Wild, which is the farm team for the Minnesota Wild, and he has a concussion protocol. So he told me about the protocol, and then I got in with a concussion therapy clinic here in Toronto, and they made all the difference. So I've seen neurologists, I have a physiotherapist, I do all my exercises. Here, I'll do one right now, stand on your thing and close your eyes and you know, see if I'm swaying while I'm talking. Well, when I first started, I couldn't do it without falling over. So, you know, all these like little tiny exercises that I've been doing for the last 13 months. Plus, wow. One of the reasons I got back into doing my live Instagram cooking classes was I wanted to get back on television. I'm a regular on City Line up here, which is an afternoon show, and I cook and talk and think. And it sounds easy, and I thought it was until I couldn't do it anymore. And so my neurologist was like, you know, Sarah Pauley, who's a film mm-hmm. person and a writer, she wrote a book. I think it's called Run Towards the Danger, Run Towards the Fire. I forget. That's my brain. But it was, you need to push yourself. And my neurologist said, you know, unless you practice, you're never going to be back on TV. So if you look back on some of the earlier posts of me cooking with my concussion, it's like I'm stumbling. I don't even know what I'm doing. But my lovely people, my core friends, my core followers, they were very supportive. And I'm so grateful for them for, you know, going through this with me as well.
Well, that's incredible. Actually, that's really commendable that you had the courage to put yourself, really literally put yourself out there in front of your following and your people, because that's kind of what it takes. I think any yeah. kind of brain injury and stuff like that, you've got to be really forthright and you've got to address it which it seemingly is what you're doing. And if you ever come out to California, we'll get you into my husband's chamber, which is hypobaric, which takes you up and down altitude, which expands and contracts every cell in your body, particularly your brain. So we're kind of noticing that it's really helpful for people that have concussion problems or any kind of TBI. Yeah.
I started working with the Mayo Clinic. I think that's amazing. So I think, you know, it's a hidden disability, and there's so many people that have concussion that aren't professional athletes. You know, I mean,
yeah.
huge yeah. amount of women that get abused, you know, and no,
but it makes me think of, because I was going to ask you this, because you know how, as we get older, and I wonder, I'm thinking out loud. I wonder, is it sometimes, you know, how you forget things as you know, like I'm 62. I don't know how old you are. I know Melissa's 60 and we're, you know, but sometimes I forget things and, you know, you walk into one room. Now I've been doing that for a long time, but I was going to ask you if you thought that was age. If you think that's just because we have so much information because of the internet, but also our age means that we have so much information on our brain that, you know, things that you need to remember, you remember, but things you don't need to remember, maybe you don't. I mean, I'm wondering if Or maybe now, maybe it's even the fact that we've been hit in the head before. I've been hit in the head many times.
You bring a really excellent point. So this is my fourth concussion. That's why it's taken me such a long time to get better.
Oh, wow.
And my third one, I was rear-ended by a tow truck. And so they consider that a traumatic brain injury. Yeah, it took about 2 years to get over that one. And so I would be all freaked out. I'd say to my friends, oh, I can't remember that word. And my friends are a lot older than me. I'm 70. So my friends were a lot about 5 or 6 years older than me. They go, oh, that's like menopause. I went, menopause is like a brain injury? Are you kidding me? And so what I discovered was that in menopausal, like when you get that kind of menopause brain, whatever you want to call it, brain fog, I didn't care that I couldn't remember the word. But when I had my brain injury and even with my concussion, I got frustrated. And so it was like, oh, I can't remember this. And it was only, my husband is very wise. He's really silly too and very immature, but he's a very wise man. And he told me, you know, as soon as you start accepting the new, whatever's going on, you'll go beyond that. And so when I stopped judging myself and going, oh, why can't I remember that word? And now I just make fun about it. Then it kind of relaxes you. And then what happens, and I've talked to my neurologist about this, is that, you know, when you go into the other room and you forget something, you think, oh my gosh, I have dementia. No, that's just normal aging. That's your brain's busy. It's exactly what you said. It's overload. But what happens is that if you focus on it, you'll never remember it. But if you go away and think about something else, it'll drop into your memory. And so, and then that's why things pop in, right? So it's a little bit of everything for sure. Aging, menopause, and also my concussion. But it doesn't scare me anymore. And I think with that acceptance of it, I think it's kind of funny. You know, I mean, I think I posted this thing on a Leafy Greens and I forgot to say, stick the bag in the fridge. Well, like, whatever. So I wrote it in the text, but it's okay that I forgot to say, put it in the fridge because I wrote it down. But, you know, before I might've gone, oh, I didn't do it. But now it's like, oh, well, I did my best. So...
You know, Harvard Review just put out an article recently talking about how women are more prone to forget things because they're carrying more of a collection of everybody else's problems into their heads. So they're thinking about the baby and I forgot to pick up the dry cleaning, or I've got to go to the grocery store and I've got to make sure the car and oh my. And so there's so much to your point about the inundation, even before the internet. Women were collectively the meal packing on the brain and remembering everybody else's stuff, sometimes remembering their own, but certainly remembering everybody else's stuff. I mean, Meryl, you and I have a conversation and I expect you to remember where I was when I forget. I said, what was I saying? And you're like, you were talking about sweet greens, putting it in the fridge. And I, oh, that's right.
Really great is in friendship, I notice, especially with you, Melissa, is that when you forget, I will remember what you were saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a sad commentary when I expect you to be listening to what I'm saying better than I know what I'm going to say. It's sad. Yeah. Beautiful.
No, it's a sign of great friendship. Come on. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good.
I thought that was interesting about women.
Yeah. And you said eight cookbooks. And are particular? I mean, that's amazing. I've written one. So I'm extremely impressed with it. Number one, because it's no joke to write a cookbook, because it's not like, oh, I'm just going to go write a cookbook and I'm going to go through everybody else's recipes and, you know, like you've got to make things up. You got to make new things. And, you know, that's what's great. So I applaud you. Melissa's an amazing cook. She should do a cookbook. She's actually a better cook than I am. But I did a cookbook once. And it was based on health. I did kind of healthy versions of food that we liked to eat when we were a kid, but I made them healthy, sort of, you know, that was the plan. And the reason, my motivation for doing it was an ex-husband who had cancer. And then my mother growing up had cancer. And I was convinced that food was related to it. Are all of your books, in regard to some health aspect, or are they just purely, you know, eat good, fun food?
They're all, I'm just trying to get you on board and eating as healthily as you possibly can without being in your face. Like, I didn't want to be aggressive. I wanted to make it really easy and welcoming. I think when you bring a cookbook into your house, it's like bringing a friend in. Like, and I want to be able to talk to you, and I wanted you to hear my voice. So, yeah, they've all the very first one I wrote was a self-published, which I will never do again. But it was because I was a home ec teacher back in the day,
Oh, wow.
and I was introducing whole wheat flour and whole grains to my students, and their parents were going insane. It's like, what the heck is whole wheat flour? And so I wrote a little snack book using, cookies and muffins all with whole grains. So that's where it started. And then from then on, my dad had heart disease. My father died about 5 or 6 years ago. And I was sort of on a mission to keep him alive as long as possible. And he was very compliant and he did everything I told him, which was really good. So yeah, they all have an underlying health message for sure. The one that I collaborated with my association up here in Canada is called Homegrown, but that was all Canadian food and supporting Canadian farmers, but there was always a healthy tip to it. But Peace, Love, and Fiber, my latest one, is just trying to encourage you to eat more fiber.
Eat more fiber so you can go on fart walks.
It's interesting that you said home ec back in the day, because in a lot of places it's not even called that. It's called like ecology or transformative life. It's like there's all these different names instead of saying home ec. And I've never understood home economics makes sense. The title is sufficient, but that was funny that you said back in the day, and then you put the name home ec right after, and I thought, she's not kidding. I took home
That's true, but I thought they didn't even teach home ec anymore, do they?
Some they do in some schools. It's different titling, and I, you know.
Right. That's interesting. I love that. Both were school teachers. I like
I
that.
really, it should come back as a mandatory class, because I think it's a life skill. It's not just how to
It
cook,
is 100%.
nutrition. And I think,
100% it is.
yeah, and I don't remember, but it might have been about 10 or 15 years ago, the New York Times did an article about, I'm probably got the dates wrong, but they kind of correlated the demise of mandatory home ec classes, cooking classes, nutrition classes, and the rise of heart disease and type 2 diabetes, because
Oh,
people
yeah.
lost the skill of cooking. So
I
that's
think
kind
at the same
of my
time they were cutting out gym class, because there's no more, you don't go outside and exercise. So we don't exercise, we don't teach kids how to eat. I've got a friend who's putting a homeschooling protocol together because they're so sick of the fact that are in our public schools, there's no more of these life skills. There's wood shop, there's no things that we were brought up with. It's, they're seemingly innocuous, but more people end up being woodworkers and and chefs and cooks and these kinds of things than they do, I don't know, neuroscience, except your son.
Hey, ease up there, Missy. The funny thing is, I would guarantee you, if we did a deep dive, a little vice section on here, and we found out that maybe the North American Fast Food Association was behind the destruction of home ec. And because if you talk about the dissension of home ec and the ascension of disease, everyone's, you don't have it at home, just grab it on the go. That's interesting, right? It's fun, and I that's interesting. I'd love to find that article. I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah, find it.
That,
Is
yeah.
at least 10 years ago. I don't know. I know. It was because I was like, yes, I told you. This is how.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But it's so, I mean, when it comes right down to it, and this is what I love about your message, it's so tangible, it's so real. You make people laugh, but you're saying things that we all go, oh yeah, that feels right. Right? I miss this. I remember this. Or the 30-year-old kids that are reaching out to you now are like, oh my gosh, I'm only 30, but you made me laugh and it made me pay attention. And now I'm
Yep.
interested in what you have to say. But that's really important stuff. And I think that the whole world is sort of shifting into this place. Like, I think there was something going on, with my parents' generation that I might want to look into, right? And because we're missing those pieces of simplicity anyway.
No, I was good. That was good. Amen.
Hallelujah.
Can I get an amen?
There you go. Wait. Sorry. Melissa, text me in the middle of it.
Oh my gosh, I used to do that when I was on.
And I thought, oh, it's probably important. It's probably something. And she texts me, ha 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 ha. Sorry.
That's a delay. That's delayed. It's delayed.
Our show. It's just, we laugh, and we laugh again. So you're the perfect person to be on our show because you like to laugh. And you're the greatest comedian of your time. Just nobody.
Right? Oh no, you are just a good time. You know what? My son was kind of raised on Sesame Street, and I went, you know, they have something going there. They're quick bites of fun information that make people smile. I thought maybe I should do that with my nutrition messages. So just make them quick and easy and digestible. Make people want to come back for more, you know. And when I was a home ec teacher, I used to do all that in my classes too. And I found that the kids listened more. And so that's just kind of part. Oh, yeah. I come from a really funny family. My dad was hilarious. And so I always thought, you know, life is so much easier when you're laughing. And if you can learn and laugh at the same time, all the better. So that's kind of like where I come from.
I have a question for you. This is a complete segue. Why are there so many great comedians that come out of Canada? So many.
I mean, because it's cold. No, I'm kidding. That's a joke. That's a stereotype. I don't know. If we're better at self-deprecation. I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. I've known a lot of funny people. I mean, having been in the Second City comedy troupe, everybody makes you laugh. I mean, in the van when we would tour, you know, it was just one thing after another because it's kind of like a competition, right? And but I know so many of my friends are hilarious.
So many of the greatest comics come out of Canada, and I met them, and you know, I got to introduce them, and I worked with John Candy. He was amazing and super funny. And the Blues Brothers, I was on stage with them once. I actually sang with the Blues Brothers in a football stadium in the 90s. That was another great moment. That, along with Saturday Night Live, were one of the great moments of my life because I thought I was a singer for like, that was probably 1 minute. Anyway, it was great. But there are so many talented people out of Canada, especially when it comes to being funny.
Right. I didn't mean to butt in, but the cast of Schitt's Creek. Oh my gosh. The most hilarious. Yeah. I never even got to audition for that. I'm so upset. Anyway.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, this has been awesome. I really admire what you're doing and how, and the message you're getting out there for people to age wonderfully, be healthy, think of things in a more simple and an easy way, taking small bites to, you know, literally and figuratively, so that they can be healthier and happier and move into their getting older more gracefully.
It's not scary getting older, honestly. It's just different and new. And I really wanted to focus on my inside, you know. And so I've never really been as uptight about the aesthetics. I was when I was an actress and they told me I was too fat and I was too this and I was too that. And so when I got into my 40s, I went, you know what? I'm just going to be me. And so this is me and I'm happy. And because I have a ton of energy and I'm still incredibly flexible. Let's do a little party trick. No, I'm just kidding.
I love that. It's good. That's important stuff. And it really is about accepting yourself. So thank you again for coming on. Thank you for not thinking I was crazy when I DM'd you on Instagram. And keep up the laughs and keep giving people great information because it's really important. We so appreciate it. And I know that our audience will appreciate it as well.
Thank you so much for reaching out. You really made my day. My friend Dina from Breakfast Television is a huge fan. And we both were like, she was anyway. So... Thank you. I'm so very grateful. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Faust Ruggiero. I am the author of the Fix Yourself Empowerment series. I'm a clinical psychologist in private practice. If you'd like to reach me, you can go to my website, www.faustruggiero.com, and everything you need to know about me, the books, the whole program is there. And there's also a contact link, and I do get back to people. And you're listening to Out Comes the Sun with Mariel Hemingway and Melissa Yamaguchi.
Well, that was fun. She's a sweetheart.
She's got a good message.
She really does have a good message. It's very tangible. I mean, that was the thing. That's what made me reach out to her. It was, she was laughing. She was, but she was talking about real stuff. And I think that if you can, sometimes people need to just hear things through a very, you know, not be inundated with information, you know, documentary style, so that you feel like, oh, I don't know. It just feels
and verbiage like, you can't say. It's like reading an ingredient deck. If you can't repeat, if you can't say it, it's hard. You shouldn't digest it. Well, it's like sometimes it's like that with information. If it's so over the top, you can't absorb it. You need
It just becomes like this pedantic ongoing blah, blah, blah. You just like, it just becomes overwhelming. And she does it. And, you know, and it's through her life experience. And, you know, to having dealt with that many concussions in her life and really having good attitude about that, because that's not easy. And no, I really commend her. I mean, it's rough to get hit in the head. Maybe I've just been hit in the head today because I can't remember anything.
You know, well, you're up high, and it may be the wind again. I'm fighting again. I'm like Don Quixote over here fighting the wind. I'm like, well, I'm not against it today. I am. I'm got there just slaying. Well, you know, one of the things that she said about her age and how she doesn't feel that age, and she doesn't feel she's all the different markers that people put on you. You've got to look this way. You've got to be this way. She just decided, this is who I am. I'm going to be happy, and I'm going to focus on what's going on inside my body, and I'm going to figure out how to be healthy. This is the approach we all need to be taking. I know that she, because of her previous career in acting, she had to have all this pressure on her. And I know there's pressure on people to look a certain way in front of the camera and all this. I get it. And I'm not being disrespectful. But I think when you get to a point in your life, regardless of your age, when you can say, look, this is who I am. This is how I look. I just want to be healthy and good and feel good and laugh. And she's got her message is so healthy and good. And it's and like you said, it's tangible.
It's very tangible. And she's beautiful too, right? She's accepted herself, and her beauty comes from her self-acceptance, right?
Yeah.
It comes from her humor, her self-acceptance, and her good heart. And frankly, you know, that's all I have time for anymore.
Listen. Yeah, I'm purging right and left. I'm purging as fast as I can. I was talking to somebody about getting rid of things, and they said, Melissa, do you get rid of stuff easily? And I said, depends. Like, I don't get rid of books easily. I kind of struggle with, you know, donating them and giving away because I love the message in them. So that's my only downfall. But most of the stuff I think I do okay with. But what I'm getting more into is getting rid of data that I don't want to, I'm not trying to put myself in a box, but I don't need to have conversations about things that don't lift and fill. And I was in a conversation recently with somebody, and they wanted to argue with me about a political position. And I just said, it doesn't matter. And they said, God, the old you would have argued. And I said, I would have. But I realized that, you know what? I'm like Alfred E. Newman, what me worry? What do I care how you vote? What do I care how you pray? What do I care how you love? What I care about is how you're treating everybody around you. And are you easy? And are you, life is, I don't care. I've said this a million times. I don't care if you live to be 100, it's a short ride. We got to make this beautiful as long as we have it.
Absolutely. And have your opinions. I don't care what anybody's opinions are, as long as it comes from kindness. If they can share that opinion without being hostile or too forceful, you know, and me too.
Yeah.
You know, whatever my opinion is, simply an opinion, you know. And I think that, and we've talked about this before, and I'll wrap this up, is the fact that we're in a time where it's very difficult to have an opinion. It's very difficult to have a conversation. I think that's what makes our show so enjoyable for people, is the fact that we just have conversations about things that I think people want to have conversations about without feeling, oh, they're threatened that somebody's going to think they're in a camp.
Right.
So conversation is not about being in a camp. It's not about being, you know, politically one way or the other, or believing in this or that. It's about it's really about exchanging information. And then when you put that information together, you go, oh, maybe it makes you think about it differently. That's cool.
Well, you know what else we do besides having great conversations is that when one of us is talking, the other ones are listening. And listening is a skill that we're losing too, because we're listening to what someone's saying and instantly thinking about how we can have a rebuttal and get our point shoved in. And listen, and you'll learn something, even if you don't agree. You'll still learn something.
100%.
Just listen.
100%. Yeah. Well, on that note, I'm going to listen to the clock, which says we're actually... We are wrapped up. I want to say thank you to our executive producer, Slater Smith. I want to say thank you to Lit Live and, you know, and our YouTube followers and the people on Apple that are following us and Spotify and wherever else you're listening to us. Thank you so much. Always know that we are trying to support the Mary L. Hemingway Foundation.org, which is a resource navigator. That's what we're really working so hard to do. We're like the little train that could. Yep. But we will get there. Your donations make a difference, because we're going to eventually have an app that will just guide you towards the whatever recovery is needed for whatever issue you have, no matter where you are in the country, or perhaps, hopefully, we pray, in the world one day. So that's our goal at the Mary L. Hemingway Foundation.org. And we thank you for joining us on Outcomes of Sun podcast. I'm here with Melissa Yamaguchi, and see you next time.